sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
But quite clearly you're wrong.
He stands between me and any trouble I'm causing.
You worms, that you. Don't chicken lips me. Interesting to talk about for change.
Do you know how many margaritas I had in Vegas last year?
Do you?
Don't you yawn. Do not yawn.
Well, it's that Tuesday afternoon again. Welcome. You're with Evie and Lee for the next 2 hours here on Hills Radio 88.9. We've got a lovely show organised for you today. We've got some SMS bits we want to cover. People have quite a few things to say these days. We always have a crack at scientists, but it's actually Science Week, so we thought we'd cover a couple of things there. Want to reconnect with your senses. We've got a guest coming in today talking about stillbirth, and that's going to be a really interesting half hour, and that's with Claire Ford. But first, welcome, Evie.
Hello.
Oh, nice of you to turn up.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't even hear the music. I just said, oh, I better go. I'll be without a job. So you're lucky I'm here.
Oh, thank. Well, yeah, I feel
just
so.
Just give me a high five for turning up.
So what do you think about this? I want to talk about Olympics. Channel 7 I want to talk about.
Do you?
No, not really.
You don't. You're not happy with them at all.
Oh, it's ridiculous. We're watching the biggest load of garbage.
That's 900 hours.
That they want to put on.
Yep.
I had to watch. I'm trying to watch because you like to try and support your fellow Aussies. I'm watching half an hour of a medal presentation to three rugby men's rugby teams, and there was no Australian in it.
Oh, I know, but we're running out of medal contention. There's not much left for us.
But we're still competing. I'd still like to watch us compete, even if we come last. So we'd still like to support the Aussies.
Yeah, I would. I've got to say, the other night we were looking, and golf and equestrian, like for hours and hours, drove me nuts. And I can't even remember what was on the other one. And I thought, I was over it. I said, I'm over the Olympics. This is what we're getting.
Well, who wants to watch 4 days of golf? I mean, we don't watch golf anyway, let alone 4 days of golf. If you were to be an athlete, Evie, well, is that you are.
Of course.
What would be your Olympic sport? What would you really want to do?
I think I'd like to be a runner, like, you know, 100 metres or 200 metres, or swimmer.
Okay.
Because they get the best accolades.
They probably do. Mind you, training for looking at the bottom of a pool for hours and hours, I mean, wouldn't impress me very much.
Well, I did look at underwater, what's that, synchronised swimming, because yeah. I thought I could pick that because then it wouldn't matter whether I won or lost because no one gives a stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'd be out of the limelight. But if you're going to do it and you're going to work that hard, be nice to get a big reward.
I was looking at the sculling, as in the rowing sculling, the single sculls. I thought that'd be quite an elegant sport, but then that's a lot of work. I like the idea of running for 10 seconds. That sort of
and
suits my style.
And then standing there like Usain Bolt, like a lightning bolt,
I like that, yeah.
I loved it too.
Or I could stretch it out, as you said, I could stretch it out to do 20 seconds worth of work and do the 200 metres and then just party.
It's over. And then people think you're the greatest person on earth bar none.
Now, we've got a couple of things we want to talk about with people writing in letters to the editor, SMS is coming through.
Whinging.
They've got a lot to say, and I think there's a lot of good things people bring up that the rest of us don't sort of think about. So it's
nice. We do, but we don't put it in the paper.
We're going to give it an extra airing.
Okay. I was just listening to someone just saying that if you eat peanuts, you're going to improve your memory.
Yes.
Is this one of our great scientists have done a check with the elephants and decided that that's what's happening?
Since when did elephants eat peanuts?
Well, you do. Don't you see it in movies?
I thought it was monkeys eat peanuts.
And elephants? Don't you give elephants in their trunks and they go, yum, yum, yum?
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. It's been a while since I've been to the zoo. I need to get back to that.
In this next segment that we've got here on Evie and Lee, we're going to have a look at what people are writing into the local papers about and what is uppermost on their mind. And it's not the Olympics, you might be surprised to hear. And one of them is, it was funny, I thought it was quite interesting, it was a councillor from the city of Unley. And have you heard about the fact that down there they're going to pull up all that beautiful stonework and put tar back down?
On King William Road.
On King William Road. Mm. Well, he doesn't want it to be black asphalt. He thinks that's boring.
Mm.
What he wants to do is turn it a brown.
Mm.
Can you imagine a sea of brown road?
Yes.
That sort of doesn't entice me to go down that road. Or tangerine. Now, that's a pretty awesome colour to be laying down at asphalt, a big, bright tangerine. Why doesn't he paint it yellow like the yellow brick road, like Wizard of Oz?
I'd actually like his idea in that he's thinking outside the box.
Outside the box, because, of asphalt.
Because they're saying it's a massive cost to repave it. So they're saying that they've had their 30 years of paving and they have to pull the paving up now.
Why can't they lay the asphalt over the top?
I think it'd make it too high, because the asphalt has to be about, I'm thinking in the old terms, 2 inches. So that's about, what,
8 centimetres? Is it?
And I think that would be too much on the road to try and put. I quite like his idea. I don't agree with his colours necessarily, and I don't know how they would put patches in, because as soon as they lay the road, of course, they start putting patches down.
Well, if they do something like a zebra or something, you could do black and white all the way down there, except I wouldn't like that. You'd like that.
Given your
propensity
for football. And actually, that would be good, as long as the strip that goes down the middle is teal. So that'd be good. I quite like his idea.
Yeah,
it's interesting that the forum he's used is the local paper.
Yeah.
As opposed to, because he's obviously put it to council and got little response.
Yeah. I like the idea, I think, and I like the fact he's talking about having a pattern inlaid to create a ripple sound. To just have an awareness of, you know, the local streets and cross sections and all that. Mm. So I thought that was a pretty good one.
Mm.
The other one that I really liked was someone whining about their dog and saying that Australia is extremely dog unfriendly, that we're back in the dark ages in the UK and Europe, and you've been there recently. Apparently dogs are seen laying under tables around
restaurants. You take your dog to the restaurant. Yeah. Inside the restaurant.
Yeah, and you can go to hotels and they can stay in hotels with you as well, and on planes. And I saw a dog on a plane trip from little hop and a skip that I did, and it wasn't a seeing eye dog or anything, it was just their pet.
So how do you feel about that, having a dog sitting in a restaurant next to you?
You know, I don't know. I'm a dog lover, but I've had the need to take my dog to a restaurant.
But you have your dog in the house where
you eat.
Yes,
I do. Yes.
Yeah.
So I can't be.
As have I in the past.
Yeah.
So really, I don't see we've got a problem here. I think we are a little bit backward, and I think we're getting worse with it.
But how many dogs is too many dogs in a restaurant?
It sorts itself out. They do it through Europe. So it's not as though we haven't got a precedent to gauge it on. And I think we're. You know, I think most people that would take their dogs out and take them to a restaurant, they'd be well-behaved dogs.
They'd probably be
hop on the table.
Yeah, they'd probably be dogs that you'd take to cafes and that, where they'd sit outside on a lovely balmy afternoon and all that. I don't know about a whole lot of dogs in a restaurant and not knowing what they ate, because that could make the atmosphere a little bit unpleasant.
There could be. I think also it makes dogs a lot more social. So we're sort of saying, okay, beware, because dogs might have fights. But I think when they're used to doing that, they become more social as well, so we don't have the problems that you know we would ordinarily foresee here in Adelaide to Mount Barker.
I think it's worth trialling. I don't have an issue with it, and I'd like to see it trialled,
okay.
See how it works.
Well, let's do it in the Burnside Council area.
I think they're the ones that probably would do it the most anyway, because they take their dogs and always have them under the table.
Yep, and I'll pile little shih tzus running around the place there, that'd be fine.
Little doggy bags, you can just pull up.
I got a couple of out of there as well, and I'll bypass the Olympic ones where they're suggesting that 400 hours of sport and 500 hours of ads. I'll bypass that one without going through that. But a couple of interesting ones. One was, who would want a narcissistic strutting peacock like Donald Trump for president, as written? Well, I'm not sure that our politicians are actually any better. Would you say, you pick a politician of ours in the last, I was trying to go back as far as I could go, who hasn't been a strutting peacock? Who's actually got down and got their hands dirty in the last 30 years in Australian politics?
I don't think any of them live up to what Trump is doing, saying and performing.
I agree with that, but I'm talking about peacocks and not Andrew Peacocks. I'm talking about Australian politics. You tell me who hasn't been a strutting peacock in charge in the last 30 years.
Well, I don't think any of them, except one,
Who?
The banker. I'm trying to remember his name. He took over after Hawkey. Keating.
Oh, he was a strutting peacock.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm saying they're all strutting peacocks.
No, but I don't think so.
I don't think anyone's got down
I
and
think
got their hands dirty.
Hawkey was all right and... I
reckon Bob Hawke was the last one that got his hands dirty and actually got in there and did some hard work.
Yeah, what about Menzies?
We're going back even further. What I'm saying, who's since Hawkey?
Okay. Yeah. I don't mind. Howard didn't worry me particularly. I did not like Keating. I thought he was up himself.
Yeah.
Peacock, he was a little bit too much like a George Hamilton.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
He was so. Yeah. But I think Trump is the scariest person on this earth at this given moment in time. With the way he carries on.
Well, we're yet to see it. I don't think it would be anywhere near as bad as everyone is trying to ride up and scare, because the whole thing is their whole system doesn't allow him to do anything anyway. So, Obama hasn't really done anything anyway. Anyway, my next one I wanted to carry on with just quickly was...
Geez, talk about strutting.
Talking about... oh, thank you. the power questions, and I think this is a really good one, when they're suggesting, when is the government of South Australia going to explain to people why our prices are so high? They're not actually coming out. They're all saying, oh, we've got to check this, we've got to try and control this, this is not good enough. But who is actually standing up and representing us here in South Australia for our electricity and actually doing something about it? We've got the highest prices. They're suggesting... certainly in Australia, if not the second highest price in the world of electricity. And yet no one in South Australia, none of our politicians that are supposed to be representing us are actually doing anything about it that we can see.
Well, I'm telling you what, Ken Hinckley's not your man when it comes to power.
You. Now, welcome back to Evie and Lee. You're with us through till 6 o'clock. Thanks for joining us. We usually sit here and have a bit of a crack at scientists. Now, it's only because, as good as they are, they tend to discover and research some things that we think maybe just a little bit naff. But all credit to scientists, because they get research money and they do some really good stuff. So we thought we'd cover today some of the good and some of the maybe the ordinary science things that we haven't come over in the past. So the one I wanted to talk about firstly, Evie, was electricity. Do you realise Michael Faraday in 1821 worked out how to use and generate electricity? So he was the first man to do that. This is back in 1821. But more so, how to develop the electric motor. And I thought that was a really clever thing.
Made a big difference
to our life.
Yep. Have you got any bad ones? I've got bad ones.
Oh, well, I've got another good one. Let's talk about it. William of Ockham. This is in 1300.
William of Ockham.
Yep. He developed what's called the Ockham razor. Now, this is a bit of speech. But what it was he said the answer is usually the most likely.
Yes, so, I've heard that saying.
So you know how we say these days, we say kiss, keep it simple, stupid. And that's basically carried through till this day. And he discovered it? No, he decided that in 1300.
Isn't that brilliant?
Don't make things more complicated than they need to be.
And we still don't listen.
No, we don't.
We're in 2016. We still are so dumb just we don't listen.
So it sounds like you've got frivolous ones, Edie.
No, I've actually got one that's I really liked, and it's only recent, and it's where they trying to figure out how the brain gets cleansed from, from toxins, because we know the liver does that during the early hours in the morning. I'm out of breath. I had to run up and down the stairs.
Just doing your fitness work.
Yep. Tell you what, lucky I didn't go to the Olympics. They reckon the others choked. I wouldn't have even got there. And apparently this gentleman found that when we are asleep, we have caves within our brain that are shut all day.
Right.
And then the CSF, which is the cerebral spinal fluid.
You just want to say that all day.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And okay. I had to really practice. And when we're asleep, they open up and the fluid swishes around and takes out all the bad toxins. Something like, the amyloids that gather when you've got Alzheimer's disease. So what is really brilliant about that is, can that lead to future scientific breakthroughs
that's a good
curing
one
it.
What you're saying. But now, if the fluids are rushing around your body, those people that would go to bed, say, after a few sherbets, then the fluid rushing around their body is probably not the right thing to be cleaning out the brain, I would have thought.
You can imagine why you get the headache.
Yeah, indeed.
Because if that's a little bit of the red wine, a little bit of the margarita and a little bit of the Baileys, not that I drink that every day.
No, but they seem to roll off the tongue pretty quick.
It was, and it was in order, which is not really good. Actually, I found some which I thought I've never heard more money wasted in my life, right?
Yes.
Calculations on avian defection.
What's an avian defection?
It's pressures produced when penguins poop.
Oh, okay.
Right. So what they did a huge study that resulted in apparently that a penguin has four times the pressure of a human and can spray 40 centimetres away. Is that not one of the best scientific results you could possibly hope
for? Now, there's reasons to do that. You know how you were talking about... You know how you were talking about the drinking of your alcohol before you go to bed? The Psychology Award in 2013, this is the Harvard University, Brad Bushman at the University of Ohio confirmed that many people feel more attractive when consuming too much alcohol.
Yeah, well, that's a given.
Isn't that? Well, no, we had to do research for that.
I could have told him that 20 years ago.
That's right.
And that's lying, 30 years ago.
So talk about the old beer goggles, there's confirmation.
Well, you know, maybe the one of the other ones I found then, apparently chickens prefer beautiful humans.
Oh, yes, what's a beautiful human?
A good-looking human, like people like us that think someone's attractive.
Yeah.
Apparently when they did this research, they trained chickens to react to human faces and they all preferred the good-looking ones.
Oh, is that right?
Are they serious?
That's funny, isn't it?
This is the most stupid and spontaneous knotting of an agitated string. And what that one was, it was a 6-page document explaining why string will form knots when you put them in a box and shake it.
I've actually seen that actually happen, and there's I don't know what the reason is. Going back on your animal one was really interesting.
What about
the
stupid chickens liking good-looking people?
Well, I don't get that.
That cockatoo must have thought I was one ugly-looking kid.
You were the favourite?
Every time. It just wanted to bite me.
Do you know zoologists in the Scottish Agricultural College? They worked out the longer a cow is sitting down, the more likely it is to get up soon. And once standing, this is what the Scottish Agriculture College worked out, once standing, this cow, it's almost impossible to predict when it will sit down again. Would you have thought?
Wow, that's amazing.
So, and I've got one more on this. This is also, now I preface this with the word sometimes, because the sometimes is a bit you've got to realise. And this is linguistics experts in Barcelona. Rats sometimes cannot tell the difference between a person speaking Japanese backwards and a person speaking Dutch backwards.
Well,
now, for the fact they can't means that apparently sometimes they can. Well, and that surprises me even more.
Well, I'd like to know how we found that out. Like, how do you find out that rodents taste starch and we can't? Does the rodent say, oh, starch. I can taste the starch in that little bit of bread I just picked up? Or, you know, cats cannot taste sweetness. Whoa, this isn't really sweet, is it? Oh, come on, guys.
So, kudos out there. Congratulations to scientists. This is your week. We wish you well. And
hand on heart, we respect everything.
Where would we be without you?
I was whining to people about the fact that I have curly leaf on my trees, Lee. And that the birds are eating all our lettuce.
Well, it must be good, healthy lettuce.
Well, you know what? It was when it was growing, and then poor old Mr. G was spending days, and he was getting greyer every day trying to work out what it was that was attacking his lettuce. And it was, you know, he was Googling, and he was thinking rats, and he was thinking bugs in the ground and all this sort of stuff. And it ended up being, it didn't end up being, I did a bit of Googling myself, and I said, I think it's birds. And when we looked at that, and I said, try some netting over them, hun. So he ended up doing it, and lo and behold, yesterday he came in a very happy man because the lettuce was finally growing and it was the birds nipping at the new buds every day.
So it's a very complicated and busy life going on in your place, obviously, at the moment.
Well, you know, gardening's lovely. I think it's really, really lovely.
It's therapeutic, isn't it?
Anyway, so I was whinging to someone and then they out-whinged me.
Oh, okay.
Because they started moaning about the fact they went away overseas. Such a tragedy that they went overseas for 3 months and they came back to find their plants had all passed, had all died, all their plants.
Well, that's reality, isn't it? You can't be there watering your plants while you're away. And who would pay someone to come in to water their plants? I suppose some would think of it.
People with lots of money.
Yeah, those that travel overseas.
Yeah. And I thought, well, yeah, you're right. And I thought, well, what are the tricks? I Googled, if I can save my husband's lettuce, I can save someone else's plants inside the house.
But that was your green finger.
Yes, that's right, button. On the Google button. And there was some really good tricks, Lee. There was particularly the ones like inside. You know, it's common sense. Don't leave them in a big window with the sun on them. You're going to burn the leaves.
True.
Put them behind a sheer curtain, you know, something like that. And also get a potting mix that's got moisture-retaining polymer gels in them, or, you know, crystals. You know that stuff you can throw in. Or you can just add them. You just put them in and they'll blow up and they'll keep the water and it'll just keep, you know, keep dispensing it over the time you're away. Mm, mm. And also, if you've got a very hot house, some people have houses that are full-blown, you know, in the north sun, and then, you know, it comes in all the windows and everything like that. Maybe you might have to move it to something like a bathroom, something like that stays cool.
You could even actually put water in the bath.
Yeah.
So the plants can absorb some of that water. I mean, that's only going to last, what, a week or two, but it's something.
Yeah, but can you do it for long? Because sometimes doesn't that over-drench the roots, something like that? But you need, if you've got a bathroom, you have to make sure there's filtered light coming in, because if you don't have light, the plant will die anyway. And then there's the ones outside. That's a bigger deal if you go away.
Yeah. You were just talking about the inside ones. One that I heard, this might be suitable for outside as well, put a plastic bag over them, because that actually retains the moisture inside.
That's a good one for outside too.
Yeah,
that would work really well if it's sort of cold, you know, when it's winter. Bag them up so they don't get all the cold. And
Both ways, exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly. It. Yeah. And the ones outside, some of the big things that I read, you move them closer together to help them provide shade and humidity, which is good. That's obvious. Like you were saying, put a bag of them or tents of shade cloth if it's hot, you know, and you've got put saucers under them, like you were suggesting in the bathtub. Do something like that and shelter them from the wind, but that's a given. And if it's winter, you put the cloches over them or glass or something like that to protect them as well.
So I don't foresee this problem in the hills in the next month or so, but this might be something we could even come back and talk about a little bit later. We're about to take a break, but coming up afterwards, we're going to reconnect with your senses.
Are you just?
Well.
My senses.
Well, assuming we've all got some.
You.
You're with Evie and Lee on your drive home for the next half an hour. Take it easy, be cool, make it home safely. Now, Evie, when you were telling me the other day what I'm allowed to talk about on radio,
and totally ignore me every week.
You wanted to talk about reconnecting with your senses and taking time out to enjoy life. Well, something that I enjoy is eating, and so I thought I'd look up the food senses and the senses of taste. So I was actually listening to Adam Liao, the chef.
Is that how you pronounce it?
The master chef. That's how I pronounce it.
Okay.
And there's five. We have on each taste bud, you know, we have 50 to 100 taste receptor cells. Now, I think that's a lot of cells, but, you know, I need them all. And what does it matter? But the ones we talked about, the simple ones we all know, are sweetness, sour, salty, and bitter. But the fifth one is a thing called umami, which a Japanese chemist identified in 1908. And that's the taste of delicious, or I know, what's your other name you've got?
Scrumptious, I found.
Scrumptious. Now, it reacts with a thing called glutamine, which you pointed out and knew.
Glutamate.
Now, do you know what food we add to our food to make it delicious and scrumptious?
There you go on there, Lee. I've got to say, people, Lee's doing brilliantly today because he's been up since 4 o'clock this morning because he Skypes his lovely daughter in the UK, and then he's a study student, and I don't know how he does it. So kudos to you that you're still awake.
So what food do we add to inspire glutamate in our...
The funny one, given this came from Asia, is soy sauce is one of them, and cheeses.
Well, I'll go one step further.
What have you got?
It's MSG.
Oh, yuck.
MSG is monosodium glutamate. So that is why they add MSG to so much food.
Oh, to get the glutamate.
Particularly in Japan.
Yeah.
To get that delicious scrumptious. So there we are.
Wow, and then your heart starts racing and you can't sleep.
Yeah, you get spots all over you.
And actually, I do react to it.
Do you?
I react to it really badly.
How it's bad?
Like I get nauseous and I get really, my heart starts racing really badly. It's just like caffeine. Like if I have two glasses, everything's a glass for me, isn't it? Two cups of coffee, caffeine, I'm gone.
Is that right?
Yeah, I like my heart will just start racing.
Thank you for telling me all of that. I shall use that little way down the track.
Yeah, you will use that, yeah.
Now, what other senses? Have you got any senses?
Well, yes. Do you know, when we were doing this, because it's this five senses of sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, there was a thing that came out of it, and there's, how many thoughts a day do you think people have?
How many thoughts?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking all day. 100?
80,000 to 90,000 thoughts every day people have, and most of them are related to the stress of the past, something you can't change that happened yesterday or the day before, and anxiety about the future. And that's why when we're so busy and stressed and our cortisol and adrenaline levels spike, our senses all shut down. And that's why I was thinking it'd be interesting. There's a term called roll call of your senses, and they reckon that you should do every day at some moment in time, anywhere, it doesn't matter where you're on a bus or you're sitting, I suppose during a song when we're sitting here, you connect with the whole five. So if it's sight, you focus what's, you know, the vision, what's in your vision. So, you know, at the moment I would look outside and look at the tree, or I'd look here and I'd be in this moment going, oh, that tree's there blowing, you know, its little leaves and around here Lee's clicking his pen.
So what you're saying is we're thinking in the moment.
Yeah, you're in the moment because you're looking right now. So yeah, that's what you've got to do. And with sound, it's the same thing. You concentrate, close your eyes for a moment and just listen if you're sitting on a bus or you're sitting in your house. And like now, if I'm in the moment, that pen clicking is... I'm aware of that. Cars going, you burping.
Oh, that was a swallow.
So there's sound as well. Smell, that can be a bit more difficult because you don't have to just smell pretty smells. You need to be able to take in the bad smells. Like if you're walking along the beach and you're doing your five senses, you can smell that seaweed and sometimes it's not pleasant, but it's bringing you into that moment of walking on that beach.
That's true.
And touch. Even sitting in your seat, like feeling how your body's sitting in that seat, how your feet are warm. But not like, you know, not, oh, I'm having a hot flush. Just sitting there, but you do the whole five senses at once and it'll take like a minute to do it. And the taste one's interesting, which you mentioned before. People have got to get onto that one because, you know, when you hit around 50, those little taste receptor cells start dying off. And so does so they die off and your saliva dies off. And so that's why people as they get older don't taste things as well. And that's why I think you should kiss as much as you can beforehand, so that because by the time you're 60, you taste terrible. I was reading this book, Lee. I just found it because I'm doing a bit of a clean up at our house, and I found this book, and it's by Hugh Lunn, and it's called Words Fail Me. You know they never do for me, but anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Obviously for this guy they did. And it's a journey through Australia's lost language. And I thought, isn't that funny? We've been talking about stressing and people being too busy and everything.
Yeah.
And I found these couple of lines, and I really liked them. The way Australians used to say they were busy was one of the things is, I'm as busy as a one-legged man in a bum-kicking competition. And the other one...
Are you allowed to say that now? Is that politically correct?
You know what? I don't care. I'm so sick of politically correctness. Laughter. We have lost the art of humour because now someone's going to be offended somewhere at some time in some moment about some bloody thing, including my swearing.
But they'll wake up in the morning.
Yeah. And this other one I like, this is, again, Aussie humour. I'm like a blind man in a dark room looking for a black cat that isn't there. I really like
Somehow I think I've done that, but
see, that tickled my fancy. Yeah. That did. Actually, you know what? Can you tickle yourself? I've just thought of that. Why can't we tickle ourselves?
I don't know.
I can't tickle myself.
The only time I can tickle myself, it was with a piece of carrot top on the side of my cheek.
But that's not a real tickle, is it?
No.
There's two types of tickles. Did you know that?
No.
There's a, I don't know how to pronounce it, kinesmesis.
Well, you can say that if you want. No one's going to know any different.
Yeah, that's true. And it's a gargle word. Gargalesis. Yeah, kinesmesis and a gargalesis.
Sounds
and the kinesmesis is yeah. the one that you said where, you know, it might run a feather down over your skin and it'll give you goosebumps.
Mm.
But you can't do the gargly one. That's where someone, you can't replicate. It's when someone grabs you and you can't resist and you start really laughing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's weird about us not tickling ourselves. We can't do it because if you could, that means every time you moved, you'd be starting to laugh. Like every movement you do, your body would be going, oh, I should be laughing.
It would be nice if we did.
Well, not really, because if you... Okay, I can't go there. I was so going to go somewhere, and I can tell you off air, but I can't you now.
We'll save that to the 8 o'clock show.
Toilet humour. And, but the body apparently has got a way of, you know, stopping this confusion of sensations so that when you're touching yourself, that it's not a joke.
All right, well, looks like we've just gone there.
And it takes two parts of the brain, and that's what I said, fancy names. I couldn't even pronounce the names of the brain.
Mm.
And the cerebellum tells you when it's yourself, and it's no threat to you. And I thought, what does that mean, no threat to you? Apparently centuries, thousands of years ago, it was they reckon what happened was people of that day would teach their children how to protect themselves, because we've got under the arms is really touchy on your stomach and around your neck. And apparently that's your most vulnerable areas to kill someone. Because if you come in under the arm, you can go straight into the into the lung and into the heart.
What's that got to do with tickling people?
Apparently they say that thousands of years ago, the people of the day would tickle their children in those areas to teach them to protect themselves from those vulnerable areas. That's how that was passed down.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting way to
It was. When I read that, I thought, that sounds ridiculous.
It doesn't explain why those areas are the ticklish areas, but...
No, it doesn't.
But you can see why they use them.
Yeah, they just are. I didn't even think of why those areas.
Do you know?
Certain people got different areas.
This is something that I've discovered. You know how I've discovered how to bar like a sheep?
Yes.
By poking your tongue out.
Yes.
Right, well, I won't do that today. But...
You want to, though?
No, I don't.
I can see it.
No, I don't.
That
I don't.
Tongue's because
I've got another one.
Oh, you got a new noise.
Do you know if you sneer hard enough? I love sneering. I love the word sneer.
Do you?
But if you sneer hard enough, you can't help but to break out into a laugh.
Show me a sneer. That's not a sneer.
You see that? I couldn't help laughing.
Stay still. I'm gonna get a photo and post this on Facebook. That's not a sneer. That's a stupid look.
No, that's how I sneer. That's
you
not
don't
really fair.
Sneer
that's
like
not
that.
Fair to say that.
Lee, seriously, what's a sneer?
Yeah, that's right. But you sneer real hard. Real hard sneer. There you go. That's my point. There you go. I'm talking about a super sneer now.
Yeah, but you do a double sneer.
Yeah, well, I've got a triple sneer if it makes me laugh. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you.
Yeah, I'd rather you bar.
And our dear listener.
I'd rather you bar like a sheep.
Oh, you want me to do that? No, I'm a sneering mood today.
Listen, you know that book I was telling you about?
Yeah.
There was a little joke in there I liked too. Okay. Do you want me to share it? I'm not the greatest joke to her. I know that. You can sneer at me later. But it's the waitress goes up to the – and this is Aussie. This is what I like about Aussie Cuban. What? You know, she goes up to the guy and says, oh, good evening, sir. The special of the day is pressed tongue. And the grumpy customer goes, you know, he had a sneery face.
Yeah.
And he goes, ugh, how disgusting. I wouldn't eat what came out of a cow's mouth. And she turned around and said, really? How about an egg then?
I like that.
Yeah, isn't that great? Yeah. Is that not great? And I just thought, yeah, us Aussies have got it when it comes to humour. We've got great humour.
And with that, unfortunately, as our time is up again, thank you everybody for joining us. We look forward to your company next week. And you've been with Evie and Lee.
No, we don't.
Why? What? What?
You're
why,
not
what?
Here. We're not here.
Oh, I'm going walking.
We're going on a sojourn.
I'm going walking in the Gammon Ranges.
And I'm walking.
You're walking. You're just walking.
I'm just walking. I'm just going to walk out of here.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, thank
so
you.
So it'll be a fortnight.
And we'll see you in a fortnight. We'll hear you. We'll see you. We'll listen to you.
All of that.
All of that in a fortnight's time.
Good
Bye,
evening.
Everybody.